Welcome back to the sixth and final session of From Sad to Glad, How to Overcome Stress, Anxiety, and Depression and Feel Happy Again. I am Jonathan Robinson.
And I'm Emmett Miller.
And we welcome you back to this session called Healing Traumatic Events and Relationships. Why don't you take it from here, Dr. Miller?
Well, I'd like to go back to something we talked about pretty early on, and that is looking at the world in such a way as that we can see a continuum. And at one end of this continuum is happiness, joy, love, success, fulfillment, satisfaction, all those positive things. And at the other end of this continuum is sadness, depression, disappointment, disillusionment, despair, and that kind of thing. And at any given moment, we can locate ourselves someplace between those two, except for those extremely lucky people who are always in bliss and those very unlucky ones who are always absolutely miserable.
Those people who are always in bliss, don't they like piss you off?
I do find them somewhat irritating because yes. I'm not sure that I believe that they're really in bliss. There's a way to go into bliss in which you're basically in denial about everything that's going on.
And that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and of course, we touched on the notion of spirituality, and I think when we begin to look more deeply into ourselves, we can get beyond those superficial states of bliss that are often very addictive states. And what we talked about is that deeper self, that we are fundamentally happy, we're born happy. You look at a child, an infant, they're smiling, they love being in the world, everything is fascinating. So that we're really born over at that right-hand end of the continuum, and very often it's because of the experiences that we have in life that take us away from that. Certainly there are some people that are born with a genetic setup in which their neurotransmitters are defective in some way, and that is the cause of their stress. But so much of the time, it's simply the fact that we are born happy, but born into a world in which we're immersed in toxic stress, that we're trained by a media propaganda machine to not even notice how we're gradually losing our joy, that spark of light and life and healing and happiness that's at our center. And what we're talking about is how we can find that spark and nurture it and take ourselves more and more towards happiness.
I should mention that even if you have a background in your family of stress, anxiety, and depression, stress, anxiety, and depression run in my family. In fact, they practically gallop in my family. But, even if you have that background, by learning the methods that we've talked about and the points of view and ideas, you can overcome that. And I find that I'm actually grateful that I have those challenges genetically in my family, because it's given me an opportunity to learn a lot of methods and have a deeper experience of life than people who are just naturally smiley and happy all the time.
Yes, we have to remember that there are many different factors. So there's the genetics, there's the family experience, kind of what the attitudes of the family are. There's our diet, sometimes injury or chronic pains. All of these things can combine to help determine how happy or unhappy we may be at any given moment. But we want to focus during this session, especially on healing from depression by going deeper than the stresses in our lives, how to become aware of and embrace a deeper sense of ourselves, to go to that deep place within, to discover that inborn inspiration that's always been there, even before we were depressed. And we had mentioned that I've done a program that's called Escape from Depression that goes into this in detail, but we may outline some of the ideas that may be useful. Into every life, some rain must fall. We all desire to live a meaningful life, but sometimes there are losses. Losses of our material possessions, loss of a relationship, death of someone that we're closely bonded to. As we grow older, we tend to lose our youthfulness, our beauty, our physical capacity. We may lose our social rank. We may lose other people's good opinions of us. We may lose our positive expectations of the world. And whenever there's a loss, then our system has to deal with that loss. And what I mean by loss is this, is that we go through life and we find that there are things that seem to give our lives meaning, and then we lose that thing. And with that loss, there's a breaking of a bond, an emotional bond that we felt with that person or thing or situation that has been lost. And the natural response of the human psyche to that is an emotion that we call sadness. Nobody likes to be sad, but sadness is not an accident in our life. It is a necessary part of the grieving process. Sadness is part of that grieving process that allows us to let go of what we need to let go of. If it's gone, it's gone. And then after we've healed, then we're free to go back to making other attachments in our lives.
I think what you said is really key, that sadness isn't an enemy, it's part of life, but when a person resists it too much or indulges in it too much, they can get stuck in it. Mm-hmm. That stuckness can be depression. In one of my conversations with the Dalai Lama, he said something that struck me. He said, I asked him if he had any regrets in his life. And he mentioned a man who he once gave instruction to, who had kind of warped the instruction to be that it was okay for him to kill himself. And the man actually ended up killing himself, and the Dalai Lama found out about this and was very saddened by it. And I said to him, so how did you overcome that sadness? And he said, I wouldn't say I overcame the sadness. I'd say that experience of loss became part of me and has softened my heart.
Hmm.
And that I don't indulge in the sadness, but the fact that I felt responsible, that he misinterpreted what I said in a way that led to this act, actually has helped me to feel even more compassion for all the people who have been misinterpreted or misunderstood or who have regrets in their life. So sadness can be a teacher. Anxiety can be a teacher. We just want to make sure that people don't get lost in the vortex of it in a way that leads to it being just repetitious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the sadness can guide us to understand better what our true relationship was with that thing that's been lost, and that can guide us on what we need to do next. And I think the process of sadness, when there's a loss in the beginning, we usually feel a shock at losing something, and a lot of times we go into denial. We try to pretend that maybe it could be put back together again. when we realize that can't happen, we tend to feel some anger, frustration about it. And then we get into the grief, and that's when there's more of a withdrawn quality. And then as we pass through the grief, we reach a state of relative detachment from that which has been lost. And finally, we become free of it, and we're ready to attach to something else. In a sense, we're ready to fall in love again.
You know, as a therapist that has worked with a lot of clients in grief, the thing I've noticed is that there's two mistakes that people tend to make. The first mistake I call is denial and distraction, meaning, you know, you get a divorce, you go through a sickness, whatever it is. Some people will focus on denial and distraction as their way of dealing with the hardship. And the problem with that is it tends to come back and bite you. Mm-hmm. So that's not the best way of dealing with it. And then the other way a lot of people deal with it is they get lost in it and they indulge in it, meaning they talk to everybody about their cancer, about their divorce, and they do that for years, or they blame their childhood and feel like a victim their whole life. Or maybe they had a hardship 10 years ago, and they're still talking about it and trying to get sympathy for it. And that looks to me often like an indulgence. And somewhere between those two extremes is a healthy middle.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can tell you, you know, you need to grieve 3 weeks for your dog dying or whatever it is. It's up to you. But you can be aware that on the extremes, you start to get into an healthy area. And some of the tools that we've talked about in this program and we'll talk about today are to help you avoid the extremes, to help you, if you find yourself distracting, denying, to actually experience what's in front of you so it can be healed. And on the opposite extreme, if you find that you're indulging in something, to move through it more quickly so you can get to the other side.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there are those two approaches to life, and one is the defensive approach where you try to avoid experiences, you try to avoid your feelings, and the other is the creative approach. And when we are busy trying to avoid our feelings, which is how our culture does it, you know, with anti-anxiety and antidepressant medications, those are the big sellers. We want to avoid feeling. But in fact, the way we grow is to actually allow ourselves to feel the feelings, to go through the whole process. We emerge wiser, more aware of our personal values, and then we can treat people and things differently in our lives rather than trying to resist. And of course, resisting feeling a feeling does not make it go away. It only hides it from us, and maybe that feeling goes ahead and causes us illness in some other way.
You know, the statement that I like the most is, what you resist persists. And I have seen that to be true, that when I welcome whatever my experience is and allow myself to experience it without resistance, which takes some courage because some feelings are unpleasant, what happens is I find that letting go of resistance is like Roto-Rooter for the emotions. It kind of clears it out. And that it's really our resistance that allows feelings to be stuck. The best analogy is, look at a baby. You know, a baby experiences their feelings really intensely. You know, they don't have the protective devices that adults have. So they experience it, and, you know, they cry or they scream. And then, you know, 30 seconds later, they're completely happy. That's somebody who's not resisting their experience, and therefore the feelings move through very quickly. So through such practices as the Sedona method, which I've mentioned before, and we have, you know, various power meditations that involve that, you can be guided to let go of that resistance, let the feelings move through you rather than either deny them or get stuck in them by indulging in them.
Mm-hmm. And little children, one of the classic ways of dealing with difficult situations is they talk to somebody about it. They talk to their parent, they talk to their caregiver, they talk to the teacher. Later on, maybe talking by the time you become an adolescent, you begin to talk to your friends. And each time you talk about something that's disturbing you, you gain a little more perspective on it. You know, again, unless you're into the mode of indulgence that we talked about before, when you have a painful experience, a neural network is set up within your brain itself. And it's by talking about it and it's by going through the experience and realizing, yes, you had that experience, but that experience doesn't have to have you, then that neural network dissolves. When it doesn't dissolve, we have what's technically called post-traumatic stress disorder. And of course, one of the ways of dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder has to do with having the person go through the situation again, such as in EMDR and other approaches that are really good at dissolving those neural networks. And so if you have sadness and you want to go through it in a healthy way, it often helps to have conversations with someone that you know and trust, someone that loves you, or a therapist. And part of it is so that you can experience someone else being with you and holding the space for you to feel what you feel and being there with you. It creates a connection that kind of goes back to the feeling of connection that we have with our mother in the very beginning, and it kind of reactivates that place of joy and happiness inside. And also, as you tell your story again, you're aware of the fact that it's just a story. When you're not telling your story, but you're deep in the feelings, it's not a story. You're actually living and reliving and reliving it in your nervous system. So that's the first thing that we want to do, is to go through a healthy grieving process if there's been a trauma of some kind.
Now, as Dr. Miller mentioned, there are various technologies you can make use of for healing past traumas and losses effectively. He mentioned this thing called EMDR, which is one modality that is very effective for many people. And of course, we're both hypnotists, so that's another modality. And he mentioned talk therapy. I would add another one we mentioned in the second session, CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. And there's another one that I like called NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming. All of these are ways to help people move through their stuff, especially traumatic stuff, more quickly. And around in my mid-20s, I found a therapist that was helpful to me, and he used many of these modalities, and therefore the resentments I had to my stepfather or to, say, a girlfriend who I thought had broken my heart, all these things which I was kind of getting stuck in, I was able to move through rather quickly. And the state of therapy is such that if you can find a good therapist or coach who knows some of these methods, they may be able to help you rather efficiently.
And it's interesting, what we're talking about is if someone's feeling bad about something, let's say an event or there's a memory, if you think back to that event or memory, as you think about it, there's an emotion that comes on. And we're talking about sadness or anxiety or anger or resentment. The feeling is not doing you any good. The event is past. It's not happening, and it doesn't have to happen again. But you're having the emotion, and that's what the problem is. And that emotion continues to program your life. Well, when we work in hypnosis, it's to take a person into a deeply relaxed state. And while they're in this deeply relaxed state, and very calm and comfortable, we have the person relive the situation, but you relive it from the point of view of a calm, peaceful, fair witness. You don't feel trapped by it. You don't feel the emotions as you go through it. And in a way, you're teaching your mind that it's possible to think about this situation or to think about your life or think about your current situations without having the negative emotion. And this is a very important learning experience. Technically, it's called desensitization, so that the emotion is no longer automatically linked to the event, so that you can think about the event without having all the emotions that would usually be attached to it.
One example I can give you of this, just so people can make use of how effective something like this is, when I was a therapist for a while, I was focusing on sex therapy with clients, and I would have a lot of women come to my office who had been raped or sexually molested. And some of them had spent years either avoiding men or feeling resentful or feeling afraid or reliving the traumatic experience. And I had come across a method called the erasure technique that had a way of healing all that in a matter of about 3 minutes. So some people had, you know, had this experience 30 years ago and had spent a lot of time, energy, even talking about it. But this simple technique seemed to help them to get over that experience and change their memory. So I thought I'd go over that method real quickly in case you wanted to try it. It's very simple. I would tell people to imagine a movie of the traumatic experience they had. And if you do this, you might not do it with the worst trauma in your life. It might be somebody rejected you and you felt bad, or in some situation you were humiliated, and your mind keeps on replaying the incident as a way of healing or getting over it, but that doesn't work very well. So this is a way to help that. So I tell people to make a 30-second movie of the worst part of the incident. And then I have them play that movie backwards. If you've ever seen a movie backwards, you know, people walk funny and they're all going backwards, and it kind of makes it a little bit funny. And then they show it forwards, but show it at twice the speed. So now you're seeing a movie that's very quick, and then you get to the end of the movie and you play it backwards at twice the speed. And then you start throwing in funny elements, like you put on a bozo nose on all the characters in the movie. So you play it forwards and backwards with the bozo nose. Then you play funny music, like circus music in the background, like do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And you play that forward and backwards as a short movie. And then you can throw in other elements, maybe slipping on a banana peel or having a chimpanzee go into the picture, whatever strikes you as kind of funny and ridiculous. Now, if your mind is given a choice between a ridiculous image and a traumatic image, it will often choose the ridiculous one. It's like taking a CD and scratching it. If you try to play that memory again, it can't play the way it did before because it has now been scratched and the memory has kind of been ruined. And it's okay to ruin memories of difficult traumatic experiences. So this is a simple technique. You can do it in just a couple minutes. And if your mind tends to replay difficult experiences over and over again, it's a way of changing that memory so it doesn't play so easily in your mind. And this is an example of basically a technology to help people get through traumatic events in a way that is more effective than how it naturally might happen just by thinking about it over and over again.
And then once you have a little objectivity in regards to the situation, you can think about it without the searing pain inside, when you can feel comfortable and accept, okay, this is something that happened and I can have the serenity to accept what has happened, then you can enter that second phase, which is to understand what is it that I really need to learn from this situation. So if I had a father who abandoned the family when I was a very young child, or worse, a father who used to beat my mother, or maybe worse, a father who used to sexually abuse me. Very, very painful experience, something that can really set up a life of sadness and depression. But what it often does is it sets up a life where I don't trust men. There's something about men. I don't like their voices. I don't like the way they laugh at things. I don't even like the way they cross their legs when they sit down, and so forth. And we'll find all kinds of things to not like about men. And sure enough, my relationships with men are poor, and my relationships break up, and my marriages break up. But once we go back and live through and reprogram ourselves, in a sense, once we heal from that trauma, desensitize ourselves from the decisions that were made in our brain when we were 3 years old or five or seven, made in an unconscious part of our brain, now we have a more objective viewpoint. Now we can say, what do I really need to learn from this? And instead of learning that all men are bad, to realize, yes, that there are some men who are still very childlike. There are still some men who are immature. There are men who are narcissistic. And what I've learned is I really don't want to be in a relationship with those kind of men. But I can also see that there are men who are not narcissistic. There are men who don't do those kinds of things or behave in those ways. And suddenly a whole new world of possibilities opens up. So as you deal with past traumas, events, and relationships that have been difficult for you in the past and deal with them effectively, you have a new learning, you're at a new level of wisdom, and you can go on to the third phase of the complete healing, which is to make plans to live your life in a way that's different from how you lived it before.
And life will test you. You know, if you have a way of it, because of your early upbringing, of attracting a certain type of person that is harmful to you and is not a good match, then you'll get those people thrown into your life to see if you can now handle that differently. And in that way, life is perfect because we're always being given a chance to test whether or not we've learned certain lessons. I've known women who seem to be amazing at attracting alcoholics. You know, if there's an alcoholic within 20 miles, somehow they will attract that person into their life. And until they learn to say no to such relationships, they keep getting that lesson until they get it right.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually healing whatever that trauma was in the past. And sometimes it's helpful to have a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're not able to move through things pretty quickly on your own, find a loved person that you trust to go through it with. And if it's still not clearing up, then you may want to get some professional help for doing that. Then you can go ahead and make new plans for your life. And as you mentioned, this the whole notion to believe that something's happening that shouldn't be happening. If you have the attitude that nothing's happening that shouldn't be happening, religious people will often say God knows what he's doing. It's all part of God's plan. That's one way to describe it. But to say whatever happens to me is here to teach me something, to take the Buddhist approach to it, it's here to teach me something. So instead of belly aching about what I don't like about it or trying to resist the experience, let me go into it and see what it is that I need to learn from that experience. My father used to beat me really badly when I was a kid. I would go to school with huge bruises all over my legs. And I just felt so worthless and helpless and embarrassed and, you know, lower than a wart on the belly of a worm at the bottom of the ocean kind of a feeling. Felt awful. And I went through a lot of prejudice in my life, in which I felt a lot of exclusion and a lot of again, helplessness to do anything about it. It was painful. And yet, as I look back, I realize that I learned so much from those experiences because I have so much empathy and compassion for other people who are suffering. And so I don't get angry with people. I'm not frustrated with people. I don't blow up, but I'm able to see this person is having pain. And I can understand that. I can understand people who are going through difficult times. I can understand people who've had a lot of trauma in the past. I can relate to them, and I've been able to help them. So all of those experiences in my life have made me into an extraordinary therapist. Would I choose those experiences? No. I mean, it's not the kind of thing you can choose. Life is going to give you rotten experiences. What's important is never let a crisis go to waste. Every one of those circumstances, including the rotten thing that's going to happen tomorrow or next week, it's an opportunity. If you can see it as a challenge, then you can turn it into an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking a lot about healing trauma. And one of the more common, really traumatic events that we all experience are the loss of relationships. As we've mentioned before in this seminar, whatever you want to call this, that if your relationships are going well and you feel connected to people and you have lots of friends, that correlates really highly with being happy. But when people go through a divorce or the death of a loved one or the breakup of somebody they care about, that can often trigger depression, anxiety, and a whole downward spiral. So I thought that Dr. Miller and I would talk about ways of dealing with relationships ending or breaking up that might be useful to you, since that's something that we all have to deal with. For myself, I have luckily had the blessing of many breakups, so I have some experience.
So many opportunities.
So many opportunities. The first seven times I didn't evidently get the lesson. So I've been happily married now for 12 years, and things are going great. But, you know, there is no ultimate security. You know, eventually we all die, or a lot of people get divorced. So it's something that you want to have some kind of mental or specific strategy for how to deal with that. And one of the things that I have found useful is the idea that I am a complete being. And the more that you invest in being okay with yourself and loving yourself and having a good time with yourself, then if a person you're in love with dies or that relationship ends, it's not the end of the world, because you can tap into a certain amount of peace and joy and humor and enjoyment of life just by being on your own. And that's something that we don't get a lot of messages in this culture to do. You know, it's like everybody's saying you should invest in this one stock, but you know that that stock eventually is going to, you know, crash and burn. But if you invest in yourself and you learn how to tap with the peace and love within or have a good time, then it makes these types of endings a little bit easier. Although that's obvious in an intellectual way, the actual practices involved in doing that are important to do while you're in a relationship, that you don't give your everything to another person. You know, if you listen to all the song lyrics, it's all about you became my everything. Mm-hmm. Well, if somebody else becomes your everything, then you're headed for a crash. So having a balanced life is really useful. But when a relationship ends, you have to have compassion for yourself, because this is one of the most stressful things that can happen to a person. You know, they have charts about where the most stressful things that can happen to a person. I think the death of a child is number one, and then divorce or something like that is like number two. Mm-hmm. And it's an experience that at some point you're going to likely have to live through, whether it be a divorce or the death of somebody you care about. And to realize that you may have to give yourself some time, get some help, use the various practices we talked about in throughout this course, use the power meditations, and realize that this is a big deal and that you really have to give yourself some time and priority to work through it.
Mm-hmm. And this, again, this has a bit to do with coming out of denial and dealing with the essence of what's going on. So I meet you and we dance and we date and you're happy and you're my everything and I think of you in every moment and you make my life happy and everything. And yeah, maybe that goes on for a few days, could go on for weeks or months or years, but eventually what happens if we separate? Then I have nothing to fall back on. And it's really difficult. It's difficult to climb out of it when you don't have a self to come back to. So if you're in a happy relationship, you can start to immunize yourself by taking time on your own. When I'm with you, I feel wonderful, but one of the reasons I feel wonderful is because you remind me of who I really am. I feel more like myself when I'm with you. You help open me up to an awareness of who I am at that deeper level. And so that work that we do in terms of meditation or prayer or whatever it might be to get in touch with our deeper self, do it now while you're feeling good, and then eventually you will be separated from the things that you love. We're born with tightly clenched fists, we die with open hands, and we take nothing with us. And if loss is invariably a negative, permanently miserable thing, then your life is going to be really unpleasant because you're going to lose everything that you've ever had. No matter what you have that's good, you know that at some point you're going to have to lose it. Now, will you lose yourself or will there be something left behind? How I think about it and what I try to do with people who come to me for therapy or to deal with major losses, when we learn to physically let go of whatever needs to be let go of, that is, to let the body not have to go through its tension and anxiety and resentment or whatever, but when we can, when the physical part of us and the emotional part of us can be quieted down, then we have let go of that, whatever it is, on a physical level. But there was a spiritual level to the relationship, and that spiritual level never has to be left, never has to be lost. So even though I may have lost that person or that relationship, the spirit is still with me, and I can still cherish that spirit, and I have living within me the spirit of all those in my life who I've been with and who I've loved and who I've been close to, even though many of them may be gone, I'm becoming more rather than less. Our feeling is we're less when we've lost something, but when we heal, then we feel like more because we have more of a spirit within us.
Mm. Well said. You probably have heard the statement, when one door closes, another one opens. And that perspective can be helpful because when one door closes, we sometimes focus on just the closed door and we don't see the open door in front of us. You know, I want to mention a couple of things I have found very useful when completing or ending a relationship or when a relationship has ended that I have found is useful for myself and clients to move through that. And one of them is to simply write a letter of completion. You know, we're trying to get to completion, and sometimes that's hard to do because the person's not available for that, or they're gone, they're dead. But we can always write a letter of completion to them. And that can help us to move through our emotions. And that letter can be ongoing. It could be, you know, a paragraph or many pages. My mother died a couple of years ago, and she was somebody I loved very much. And I found that as I wrote a letter of completion saying how much I loved her and also talking about the resentments I had, and I wish she had done this differently and that differently, and how happy I was that her passing went rather smoothly, that it was a many-page letter, but as I reread it, I could feel something in me kind of let her go more quickly. And it was very helpful in moving through the various emotions that can come up in a relationship such as that. And the same with breakups that I've had with women in the past. Sometimes such a letter has been very useful. I remember with one woman, I was very addicted to her, and she broke up with me. It was very difficult. And I was having a hard time coming to terms with that this is really the end. It was almost like the hope I had in it coming back together kept on reinflicting the same wound and kept on leading me to being in a stuck place. So not only did I write a letter to this woman, but I went to a spot that is kind of sacred to me. I took a picture of her and us together, and I burned the picture. And kind of said to the existence, creator, whatever you want to call it, I need your help in letting this go. And the fact that I had just burned the picture and burned the letter was an enormous burden off of letting go of the hope or the stuckness that someday we were going to be together. And finally, I could let go of looking at the closed door and instead look to the future where there was an open door and met my wife just a few months later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because you were open, you were free.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned addiction, and that's an important one, particularly in relationships, because when we're addicted to somebody, we're not. It's about our addiction, and it's not really about them. And they kind of get that. They kind of get that somehow my body is fulfilling his needs, or his fantasy about me is fulfilling his needs, but he's not seeing me and I'm not feeling what I want in the relationship. And so I leave the relationship. And you can't believe that I'm leaving the relationship because you're so addicted to it. So we want to avoid it. Infatuation leads to a feeling of addiction early on in a relationship. But the sooner we can begin to establish, yeah, I'm still a whole person. I absolutely love being with you. It makes me incredibly happy. And I have a life over here that's me. And if you go away, I won't die. I will have sadness, but I will heal because there's still a me over here. The other kind of loss that takes place that sometimes keeps people from going ahead with their life comes from feelings of guilt and feelings of shame, where there's been a loss in the past, but you know what? It's your fault. And if you hadn't done what you did, then this wouldn't have happened. And so you carry this guilt with you because you did it. How do we let that go? You know, guilt, the gift that keeps on giving. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, I've been happily married for 30 some odd years now. But this was my third try. Mm-hmm. And there are two other tries. I was pretty immature. I didn't have the relationship training that I've tried to give to my kids. I didn't have it. And those relationships ended pretty much because of my behaviors. And I think that was pretty clear to everyone involved. And I think it was heartbreaking to a lot of people, a lot of families and have been hurt, and my children of those previous relationships were injured. And they may still be carrying scars from that, and it may still be interfering with my relationship with them. And there's nothing that I've been able to do about it. And that's a sadness. and that hurts. And it's not too hard to get from there to feeling guilty. And I've felt an enormous amount of guilt. I've felt a lot of shame along with it. And that's the kind of thing that can hold you back. But I've used these as ways to grow, to really understand why it happened, to understand what it was in me that kept me from doing the right thing. And I've worked on repairing myself. Those are things that I would never do again because I'm a different person. I accept that they have been done. I accept there's nothing more than I can do. It's the past. And I don't have to keep bringing the past into the present. And in fact, I can do the opposite kind of behavior in my life and make sure that I nurture my relationships. And more than that, I can help other people learn how to be in relationships and how to preserve relationships. And I've been able to help hundreds or thousands of people to avoid making the mistakes that I made before. And in a way, that feels like it's a part of my path. I had to go through those experiences to learn what I've learned now so that I can be doing my dharma. And so for all of us who have shame and guilt about the past, it's the same thing. The past is gone. Not one second of the past can ever come back again. And you can think about it because you have a mind. But how you think about it, the spin you put on it, and the emotion that you attach to it is up to you. And so learning how to change your relationship with your memories in that way leads to the kind of growth that can let you go forward into the future. So healing some of those kinds of traumas can be the most difficult because you can't really blame it on somebody else. Mm-hmm. But you can get through it, and some of the deepest learnings can take place.
Well, that was really something. I appreciate how you're using guilt really as a motivator for changing your behavior rather than getting stuck in the swamp of it. And that's such a key lesson to learn, and I'm glad that you were able to convey that.
Mm-hmm. But you know, Jonathan, I'd like you to share your weak link theory. I think that can help us out quite a bit.
Okay. Well, the basic idea is something I saw as a therapist and just as a person observing people is that people tend to focus on what they're good at because it feels good. They feel competent. But a lot of times, the areas that they are avoiding end up causing them a lot of pain and difficulty. So for example, somebody who's a good business person might focus a lot on business and make a lot of money and not spend as much time nurturing their relationships. And then they are whacked on the side of the head by divorce or kids that don't like them because they never focused on that. So the theory is that if one thing in your body or in your relationships or your finances is out of whack, well, the whole system eventually suffers. Therefore, our job is to find out what's most in need in our life and put our time and energy there. That way, you'll likely get the most bang for your buck, meaning that area, as it gets better, will improve the rest of your life. But also, you'll avoid situations where, because of lack of attention, things really come back and bite you. So the way you can make use of this theory, the weak link theory, is to ask yourself, what area of my life really feels not as competent or as healthy as the other areas? You know, how are my relationships doing? How is my health doing? How's my mental health doing in terms of the thoughts and my spirituality? And wonder which one really needs the most tune-up and put your time, energy, and even money there. So part of this course has really been about looking at the different areas of life and different approaches to improving one's life and giving you tools and ideas to improve them. So for example, in the first week, we came up with lots of ways to interrupt negativity. If you don't know about those things, you can get lost in negativity just because you don't know how to interrupt it. So that's an important skill to be able to have. Then the second session was about changing your relationship with negative thoughts, what has often been called CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, basically lessening the impact of negative thoughts so you're not caught up in always thinking about the worst or caught up in beliefs that no longer serve you. Well, once again, if you are very poor at that skill, focusing on it is going to greatly improve your life very quickly. In the third session, we talked about all things having to deal with the body and health. You know, I know people who have lots of money and great friends and a job that they like, but they have one thing wrong with their health. And their life is really a reflection of how their health is that day. You know, you could have everything going for you, but if your back hurts like hell that day, your life suffers. So for clients like that, I encourage them to really focus on their health because that's the weak link. And by improving that weak link, they will have a much better life. Then in the fourth session, we were talking about positive psychology principle and practices. The idea that not only do you want to interrupt the amount of negativity you have in your life, but by focusing on positive feelings and emotions, that can sometimes heal the negativity and make you feel good besides. So some of the best methods for overcoming stress, anxiety, and depression involve nurturing positive feelings. And there are some people that really are not good at this, and they find that when they tune into some of these methods, it makes a dramatic difference in their life very quickly and can be fun besides, because healing old wounds, as we've talked about in this session, generally is not as much fun as, say, focusing on gratitude or focusing on how to deepen a relationship. So a lot of people find that that's a great focus for them. Then in session 5, we talked about spirituality and a sense of purpose. And once again, if your life lacks meaning, you could be doing everything right, but there'll still be an emptiness there. So if that's a weak link for you, then you might consider focusing primarily on that. And by doing various spiritual practices, you may find that you fall in love with having a deeper connection to yourself within.
And remember, by spiritual practices, we mean practices that can put you in touch with the love that's at the center of your being, with the beauty of the world that you live in, with your experience of gratitude for all the positive things that are happening, and with the spirit that moves through all things, however you might experience that.
Good. And then this session, we've been talking about healing the past, especially traumatic events or relationships that have ended or not gone the way you wanted. And once again, giving you various ideas and tools. And if you feel like that has been a big triggering event for you in terms of creating stress, anxiety, and depression, then it's good to explore the ideas we've suggested and find ways to nurture yourself and let go of such events. So the question I have for the listeners is, which of these 6 areas calls out to you the most right now? Which practices that we've given? And obviously we have a list of practices for each session, and hopefully you've been keeping track of some of these practices and seeing which ones work for you and which ones don't work quite as well. So by keeping track of that, you know what might be the best focus for you here on out. Also, Dr. Miller and I have other programs that you may not have listened to yet, his Escape from Depression and Abolish Anxiety, as well as my program called Deeper Happiness. And each of these programs are incredibly useful, and I encourage you to at least start them, give them a try, and see if they motivate you, call out to you, feel like a good thing to do. In my Deeper Happiness program, it's a experience of just listening to me for 15 minutes a day and trying one method for that day. And that structure seems to work really well for some people. With Dr. Miller's programs, they have their own advantages, and I encourage you to check them out. But you have a lot of support material here, because we want to make sure that if we give you enough material, that you'll have stuff to keep you going and moving forward, especially when dealing with challenging times.
I might mention also a couple of other ones that you may not be aware of that really focus on the applications of a deep relaxation, self-hypnotic techniques, and guided imagery, visualization. The first one is called the Serenity Prayer, because it teaches those principles. The second is called Accepting Change and Moving On, which is real practice in how to let go of the past. And finally, there's one that's called Writing Your Own Life's Script, which is how to focus on really creating the future that you want to. And all of those would be good kind of advanced courses to take after this one.
So your job is to figure out what supports you and what you resonate with, both in terms of people and practices and motivation, because the culture we live in is throwing at us impressions that are often telling us to avoid stuff and be distracted. And what we're trying to do is encourage you to learn skills and ideas that are going to be like friends that can keep on nourishing you as you go on.
And then as you change the pictures that you have of the world in your mind, change the story that you're telling yourself, you will change your life. You change your physical body, and you will also impact the world around you in a way that is really remarkable. Change that story.
Mm-hmm. So, as with other weeks, we have the various handouts associated with this week's session that we'd like you to go over. And we also have various practices that we recommend and have talked about from this session. And fill out that practice rating sheet and see which methods seem to work best for you. Now, in terms of overall motivation, I think this is a big area that a lot of people know what to do, but they don't necessarily do what they know. So in the 90s, I was a big motivational speaker, and I learned a lot about motivation because I saw that that was often the weak link that kept people stuck. You know, people had lots of information and they even knew of resources, but they didn't necessarily have enough motivation to keep at it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to have a great body, everybody knows that going to the gym is a good idea, but going to the gym once is not going to do it. You have to go periodically and you have to do it consistently. So here's my simple formula for success. It's two steps. One step, step one, is do the right thing. Do something that actually seems to work for you. Step two, do it consistently. So if you want success in terms of finances, do the right thing, you know, make the right investments, get the right job, and then do it consistently. If you want to have a great relationship, do the right thing, meaning have good communication, be kind, etc. Do that consistently. If you want to get over stress, anxiety, depression, we've given you a lot of ideas of what the right thing is. Now you have to do it consistently.
Or you may find in listening to some of the power meditations that one of them really puts you in touch with something, relaxation or your own internal wisdom. Make sure you keep doing it. Do it consistently.
So true. And we really think that the power meditations are one of the most important aspects of this program, in that they're so easy they're guided ways of taking you from where you are to hopefully a better place. And all you have to do is press a button and be taken on a journey. So we hope that we're giving you enough choice that you find something that you really resonate with. And once you find it, keep it up. Now, other aspects of ways to stay motivated is to find like-minded people, people who are interested in the same things you are. And in fact, you might suggest this program to people that you know who are struggling with stress, anxiety, and depression. And once you have a friend like that, you can support each other. Another thing that can be useful, as we've mentioned before, is a life coach or a therapist that you meet periodically with to help you with learning these skills and moving forward. I know in my own experience, I've used a life coach and therapist at times in my life and have found it incredibly useful.
A buddy, a partner that you work with is really important. So even if it's a coach, so much the better. Mm-hmm. But to even have anybody who you've called and said, okay, let's, perhaps somebody who's going through the same thing as you, it's, that is one of the greatest things for sure.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the idea that small but consistent efforts will be graciously rewarded is really key. You know, you don't have to overcome a wall. You just have to put a little hole in that wall and the light comes through. The question is, how often are you putting those little holes in the wall?
It's like those stories you read in the paper every once in a while. There's some little old lady who lived somewhere and she had a Social Security check and she had been there for 20 or 30 years and she dies and they found out she's left $2 million to some organization because she'd been saving these pennies day by day by day. And you just go, how could that be? Well, that's just how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
Not a surprise.
I know when sometimes I've been caught up in anxiety or in previous years, struggle with depression. Something that helped me was the realization that I'm not depressed or I'm not anxious all the time. And little things that would take me out of it eventually built up a momentum to help me to feel free of that depression. So, you know, taking my dog for a walk or whatever it was that helped me to feel better. And realizing that I'm not, quote, depressed, mm-hmm. you know, with this burden, that, you know, feelings come and go, and I now have enough tools to get through these feelings and get back to feeling good again.
And I just want to reemphasize the importance of the story that you're telling yourself. You are writing the story. And feeling helpless is just an easy cop-out. You're not helpless. And the steps, it's kind of like the four R's, is first of all, remember who you really are. Remember your divine nature, your sacred self, your deeper being, the wisdom that's within you. Because that's where you start from. That's the base. Get rid of everything else. Remember who you are. Secondly, release, let go of what needs to be let go of. Then thirdly, reframe the whole story. So here my father's beating me and I've got poems I wrote. I was the most miserable guy in the whole world. And now look at me. It's like he taught me so much. Reframe the story. And finally, rescript, which is to write your script for the future. I was watching a television show and I saw this young woman in there. She was, she must be about 20 years or so old, and she'd been shot in the face, and she's alive, but her face is kind of contorted and everything, and any young woman of that age should be feeling pretty depressed about it. But she was actually a young woman who had wanted to get an education, but unfortunately she lived in Pakistan. So the Taliban had shot her in the face to keep her from going to school. And she wasn't on television complaining. She was on television challenging the Taliban. And she was speaking for all the young women in the world who want to get an education, and she was on fire. The difference between who she could have been and who she is has to do with the story that she's telling herself. Mm-hmm. Oh, there was an old story about a man who, a burglar broke in and just took, you know, tons of stuff, his silver candlestick holders, got all of his money, everything. And someone said to him, says, you know, you must be really sad. He says, no. He said, I'm really happy. And they said, well, why are you happy? He said, well, I have three reasons. First of all, even though they took a lot, they didn't take everything. And second of all, even though they took a lot of stuff, they didn't kill me. And third of all, I'm happy because I wasn't the one who did the stealing.
That's a good reframe.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Miller and I are honored that you would listen to this program. We are hopeful that you have the tools now to move forward. You're welcome to contact us through our websites. I'm at findinghappiness.com, and you are at
drmiller.com, drmiller.com.
Great. And if you incorporate these skills on your own, something amazing can happen. Not only are you healing yourself, but you're healing everybody who you are in contact with, your kids, your mates, and your job is to get to a place where you feel good within so you can give your best to those you care about and the world. We thank you for listening. And this is Jonathan Robinson.
And this is Emmett Miller.
Signing off. Good luck and thanks for listening.